Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to this episode of the Scottish Paddlecast, brought to you by the Scottish Canoe Association. You're currently tuning in to the latest episode of People in Paddlesport series, where we're catching up with the diverse characters across Scottish paddlesport community. I'm your host, Roger Holmes.
And I'm your co-host, Lara Cooper. Joining us today are some of the team at Neski, North East Sea Kayakers. Our focus is talking about club culture. We know that the vibe, the tone, the feel of a club are vital to creating enjoyable spaces where people want to return and take part. And as the winner of the SCA Club of the Year last year, the team at Neski are clearly doing something right, with great nominations that praise the clubs, the volunteers and the activities they offer both on and off the water. We're going to start by chatting to Karen and Rude, two of the newer members of the club, about their experience. Hi, guys.
Hello there.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Karen and I go a long way back. We paddled together on the Zambezi back in the 90s and several years competing together in the World Rafting Championships. So it's great, Karen, to catch up with you again. Always a pleasure.
It's wonderful after, what, 25 years where we didn't see each other. So, yeah, it's super.
Brilliant. Can you kick us off with a bit about what you've been up to since and what's drawn you to joining the club?
Well, after you abandoned me to the African jungle that was the Zambezi rafting scene, I spent probably about 4 or 5 years working on rivers, safety kayaking, raft guiding, trip leading, multi-day trips, enjoying lots of rivers all over the place. But I think I got to the point where I'd scared myself a bit too much and was fed up living in guys' messes and living out of a rucksack, and came back to the UK and went back into working in community learning and development and culture and sports services and in local authorities, and didn't get back in a kayak for about 12 years doing other things, and decided after a fantastic trip to Greenland with Glenmore Lodge that I really wanted to get into sea kayaking, which is something I'd always sort of played around with but not really done to any great extent. And I was living in Aberdeenshire and I had heard of Neski, and was fortunate enough to be able to join the club about 2 years ago. So I have not been doing half as much as I would like to do with the club, because there's lots of opportunities out there, but thoroughly enjoyed the involvement that I have and the people that are in the club. And I'm loving my sea kayaking. So that's where I'm at now.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds really good. How about you, Rude? Maybe you could tell us a bit about you and how you got into paddling.
Okay.
How you joined Neski.
Right. I'm Rude Henskens. I'm Dutch. And I moved to Scotland in 1988 for the oil and gas industry. And there's a saying in Holland, it goes like, God created the world and the Dutch created Holland. And basically means, you go to Holland, there's water everywhere over there. So my parents made sure that all the kids could swim from a really young age. On top of that, we always have been living really close to the waterside, either rivers, canals, little lakes, sea, these type of things. My parents also had a boat from probably since I was 4 or 5 years old, somewhere over there. So we spent a lot of time over there. In the summer holiday, went off to the sea. And I always have been very interested in water sports, either above or below the surface. So that would include things like swimming. I've been scuba diving for about 50 years, although it's taking a bit of a back burner at the moment. A little bit of water skiing, was not particularly good at that whatsoever. And ice skating. Now, ice skating, is that a water sport? Well, kind of, it's frozen water. So how did I get into paddling? It's a kind of a funny story, I think. We do a lot of walking at Haddo Estate. Haddo Estate is a country park near Ellen. And in that estate is a lake, one little lake and one bigger lake. And on one of these days, spoke with one of the rangers, and there turned out to be an injured cygnet in the lake. So we're talking about things, and one of the options was put on your diving gear, put on your dry suit, put on your flippers and swim to it. Another option would have been a boat with a very shallow draft. So I was thinking, one of my friends is a member with Nesky. Well, I did not know the name Nesky then, but she was a keen kayaker. So then the idea about, oh, let's try a kayak maybe. Well, having that idea was maybe not such a bad idea, but as it turns out, Daddy Swan is a very big swan and very aggressive. So basically decided, do not go in the water with a boat or swimming whatsoever. Do not do that. So eventually the cygnet was rescued by the rangers with a tarpaulin. It had a broken wing. It needed to be put down. It was a bit sad. But the idea about kayaking stuck in my head, or also in my wife's head. And she said after a while, from, oh, why don't you go kayaking? So that's a good idea. I then contacted via my friend Donald. So I contacted via my friend Donald, send him an email. And then I joined Nesky and started coming to the offered swimming pool for the winter sessions. This was quite nice. Then in 2020, the COVID came in. So not much happened, but I managed to go on a course, 5-day course at Sea Kayak Open, which was really good. And I do have to say, the few sessions I had with Nesky before COVID kicked in came in really handy, because you were already familiar with getting out of your boat in a pool. That's one thing. Do that in the open sea is a different thing. And also with the real basics about rescuing somebody in a capsized kayak or being rescued in a capsized boat. I think that's it for the moment. That's how I started kayaking.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it'd be nice to hear from you both what sort of activities there are at the club. Some of the activities that are happening that you guys get involved with. Do you want to kick us off, Karen?
Yeah, well, like Ruud, I think I must have joined in the height of winter, and there were pool sessions going on, and that was brilliant because, as I said, after a long time not in a kayak, everything had gone. So the opportunity to join in sessions that were actually really well planned, you know, because I'd gone along to pool sessions thinking, well, you know, folk usually do these things and you muck about in boats and that's it. But there was a fantastic structured program, and we worked in edging and rescues and support strokes and rolling and all sorts of things. So that kind of gave me a bit more confidence over the winter. And then I joined some of the Tuesday evening sessions over spring, summer, where we went out, and it was wonderful because I got to go to all sorts of different parts of the Aberdeenshire coast from the sea, which I hadn't been to before. And that really was wonderful. And it was great to try some of those. As well as taking some of the practical skills development sessions onto the sea. So we had various rescues and roles scenarios training out at Stonehaven. I then went into the next winter. I can't remember if that was the winter before, and joined the yoga for kayakers, of which I lasted a few sessions until my back gave in. But that was really good. And again, fully intend to do that. And then there's always been the end of season social meals, which, you know, that's been lovely to do that as well. So what I haven't done are the weekends and the week-long trips, which look brilliant. And I really do want to do those. And I would probably like to try and get some of my own proficiency awards of some sort to just confirm that I'm maybe a little bit competent to be on the water, because it's kind of handy to be able to do that, you know, if you want to go out with different people from different clubs and things. So that's been the sort of things I've been doing with Nesky.
Oh, brilliant. How about you, Ree? What have you been involved with the club?
Well, it's a good question. Karen already listed quite a few, I think. I did make myself a list here, so I probably will repeat a bit, but you can edit that out to take it. The Monty Pool training has been mentioned. You choose the evening pedal, has been mentioned as well, but we also have, in addition to do it on the sea in the summer months, we have our sprint training in the Don. This is one of the rivers in Inveroorie. And that is basically 10 laps up and down. I think each lap is probably about 200, 250 meters long, somewhere over there. And you try to go as a bat out of hell. Basically, this, you try to beat Donald. That's still one of my ambitions, but hasn't happened yet. But one day, Donald, one day it might happen. Then there is the yearly Eiten clean, which we do, I think, around March or so. We go to the Eiten River between Nieuwbrugge and Ellen. And the amount of crap we find, the amount of stuff we find in the reeds is absolutely amazing. And there was an article, I think, last year in Scotsec about it, about one of the members finding a message in a bottle that has been there for, I think, about 30 years or so, 25, 30 years. And that bottle was perfectly intact, was nothing wrong with the bottle, had been stuck over there. And it did not make it further than about maybe a mile and a half from Ellen, where it was thrown in the water. It's just quite amazing. We found all kinds of other things. But the good thing about it is that the areas we have covered so far, there is very little litter left. So really what we get out has been building over many years. So what we already covered, we find a little bit, but a really tiny little bit. One of the members organizes a beach clean. I've not managed to attend that one, but it's the same type of idea. Typically around the Moray Coast, they do a beach clean in September. I believe it has been canceled for the last 2 years due to weather. In the summer, are the day trips. I've not done many of those. The Red Guard evening sessions is a kind of practical social thing, like a quiz night. We're going to have a quiz night beginning of October again. All kinds of questions will be asked. And the questions are kind of the same year after year. They're kind of the same. But do we have any idea what the answers is of them? Mostly not, but I'm getting better at guessing them. We had a session of build your own boat. That was quite interesting. That was done by Jim. So you build your own boat starting from nothing. You build a plug and then you put a polyester mold around there and then you start putting a release agent in there and get your own boat together. I think that's still work in progress at the moment. We had talks about Scotland circumnavigation by one of the members. We did a 1,600-kilometer trip in 70 days, I think. That was very good to see all the things he did and encountered. There was either one or two sessions about a Greenland trip done by the members. We had a session about boat kit maintenance, well, boat maintenance and a kit maintenance. Make sure the thing stays in one piece and still works. And then we have our pre- and post-season dinner and a Christmas dinner. Some of the other things we did is first aid course, which was really enlightening because you really see very quickly there's a huge difference between people teaching you something, thinking you understand it. Then you do a part of the exercise inside the classroom. That's reasonably controlled. And then you go outside. And it's not the weather dependent, it's regardless of what the weather is. You go outside and you do something, right? That was very interesting because it's amazing to see how quickly you forget what you just have learned. That coastal navigation and tidal planning, very interesting as well. And the VHF course. What I want to say about the VHF course is I did have my VHF license. But when I got my license, that was all focused on getting the license. How do you pronounce alphabet, bravo, et cetera, which buttons to press. The one we did with Nesky was really about, okay, guys, ladies, something happened. This is the scenario. You're upside down, right? The waves are 10 meters high. There's nobody there. The only thing you have in your hand is a radio. What are you gonna do? And that really gives you some kind of base that when you need that thing in all earnest, that you know what to do with it. We had a make your own Greenland paddle, 2 days session with that. And quite amazingly is nobody had made a Greenland paddle out of wood. By the end of the second day, about everybody had a paddle that was more or less finished. I even took my one to the swimming pool and it felt kind of nice. The even paddles, the Don Sprint, we mentioned that. The day trips, we mentioned that. Nocturne Loch, Karen, you mentioned that one as well. So
that's nice. It's a cool program.
Yes, that's a very cool program.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are still. Oh yeah, 1 second. We're going to have in Nocturne Loch, I think this next year is how to pack your boat, how to put all these things in your boat. And I've seen pictures from the guy who went around Scotland and all the stuff he had in his boat. And I said to Donald in the past, I said, if somebody shows me that picture and shows me the boat, I would say it's impossible to get all the stuff in your boat. I know the guys are doing it, but how do you all that stuff get in a kayak?
I'm with you, Rude, on that one. We went away with Young Ambassadors. I have no idea how. I was rubbish at it.
Well, you maybe can join us early next year, Roger.
Yes.
Sounds an amazing program with so much going on. And I get it, Karen, where you're saying, I can't do everything. You need to retire.
Oh, I have!
That's fantastic. And it sounds like there's skill development stuff, knowledge development things, physical training, the yoga, you know, for mobility, as well as just getting out there and doing enjoyable trips, and a whole bunch of social stuff in there as well. So it sounds like there's a really nice mix of loads of different activities to keep people going and keep people active and dip in and dip out of the things that you're interested in. It sounds amazing. We were wanting to talk this evening about culture and club culture, and I could feel your energy from both of you about, you know, that it's a really nice space to be. It's a really nice club to be involved in. We talk about club culture as to sort of what it feels like to people when you're in a social sort of environment. What does it mean to you, and what would you say that Nesky's getting right?
If I had to summarize club culture, and if I was only allowed to use one word, right, one word, I would use the word camaraderie. I feel a very strong camaraderie within the club. And of course, there's more to it than that. But I think with all the things happening, camaraderie to me sticks out very, very much. I've also always felt very welcome in the club. I still remember on the first evening when I went off to the Red Guard, the place where we meet in the winter months once a month, is you come in the pub, right? You know very well, you basically know nobody. You recognize one or two of the faces. Right, recognize a table with some Nesky members because I've seen them before. And it was immediately, hey, Ruud, how you doing? Come sit over here with us, right? And it was straight away a conversation. Quite often what you see is, if you don't know the people, right, then it can be quite hard to get these conversations going. But this was directly from the Nesky members, or specifically one of the members, from Ruud, come sit here between us, right? Not from sit somewhere at the end of a table. No, come and sit here. And to me, that was quite impressive.
I think you've summed up beautifully, Ruud. I mean, it's so friendly and everybody cares about each other and the club, you know, and there's a genuine shared love of the sport by everybody. And it just feels like everyone wants to see everyone else doing well and enjoying that. You know, some committees, you know, there are professional committee people that, you know, just go on lots of committees and so on. But it feels like everyone, and I I could look it up, but I couldn't tell you who's on the committee, because it just feels like all club members are listened to and are able to say what they fancy doing, and often it's responded to and things are provided. And it's just a very approachable, open group of people, yeah. who are really encouraging, and you know, good debate and discussion is always had. Yeah, but camaraderie, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then would also like to say is from what always impresses me as well is this safety aspect, and it's a kind of hidden. It's a part visual, right? Before you go out, you do your safety talk. But what I see every time as well is this hidden safety culture. Like, you know, people are watching out for each other, right? And especially in my case, because typically when we go out on the sea, is when they look around me, I'm typically one of the newer people, or maybe some quite often the newest person in the group. And I always feel, not feel, I know from there's somebody who keeps an eye on you. And at the same time, there is a no-pressure approach combined with a go-out-of-your-comfort-zone system. Like, you all know from when you go out over there, it can be quite nice, quite flat. And sometimes, in a very short time, the weather or the sea can throw things at you you don't want to see, right? Things you don't want to see, as Donald says, is having that wave with your name on it, right? It's coming right at you, what you're gonna do. And if you don't push yourself every now and then, right, you're not prepared for that. So it's a good safety aspect combined with get out of your comfort zone a bit.
Nice. It sounds like a really nice balance between, sort of activities at the right level for you, not being overly pushed, but also challenge as part of the learning process.
Yeah, exactly.
And it feels like there's always the opportunity for more, you know, that you can do more through the club. And people certainly don't give the impression that it's onerous on them to, you know, talk to you or explain things, or, you know, it just feels that people are genuine and wanting you to do well.
Amazing.
If you had to say one thing, what keeps you going back to the club? Is there a, what would be the most important thing that draws you both back in every time?
I think
to get that blinking bomb-proof roll back. And I'm going to master that underwater re-entry, Donald. This winter it's going to happen.
I like it.
That's very selfish. No, that's I would like to spend more time with the people in the club, the group, you know, and get on some of the weekends and get to know people a bit better as well. You know, I mean, there's a whole range of things out there. The pub quiz sessions are a wee bit further away for me to travel, so I don't go to those. But I always look forward to seeing people, you know, on the water and, you know, just get to know everyone a little bit better. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Jill and I are not Burn Loch, both of us spending more time upside down with face masks on, trying to work out how to do various things. It's just good fun, you know, with nice people and that shared common interest of the sport.
And you can sort of see that just even around. I know the listeners can't actually see you guys because we're doing this on Zoom, but the smile and the enthusiasm from all of you just really comes through. No, thank you for that.
I would like to add over there is whenever I come back from either a pool session or the River Don or from out of the sea, when I go to bed in the evening, I sleep really well because I'm so tired.
Nice, you're watching your heart rate.
Yeah, and actually, funnily enough, is last night is I woke up, right, and I said to myself, "I've done it." Then I went, "What have you done? I managed to roll." and as some people will know, well, if I will roll sometime in my life. It can be this year, it can be next year, it can be the year after, but there will be one moment in time that I'll manage it. And if I don't manage it, well, so what?
Brilliant. And I know you've been mentioned a few times, Jill, within this conversation as sort of, you're a little bit longer term club member. Is there anything you could add to sort of a discussion we've been having?
Well, gosh, I was listening to the big list of activities that the club's provided. And even I was amazed at how much that has been covered over you know, quite a short time. But I think one thing that Karen and Ruud didn't mention was that we do have quite a lot of weekend and longer trips. And that's something I particularly enjoy, especially the expeditions. That's one of the activities, one of the many things that Nesky does as well.
You've been in the club about 7 years, is that right?
That's right, yes.
And gone from a relative beginner to fairly competent now.
Well, I just learned so much since joining Nesky. It has been a fantastic journey just joining the club and, like Ruud and Karen have said, you know, meeting, welcoming people who've been very supportive. And that's really helped me develop and improve over time. And it's really been a great journey being part of the club. And because the club's given so much to me, I decided to join the committee and give a little bit back because, and that's sort of provided more involvement in the club as well, and that's been enjoyable.
What's it like being on the committee?
It's great. The committee has committee members with a role, but also welcomes in people who just want to be part of the committee. That whatever happens in the club isn't driven necessarily by the committee. If somebody wants to run a trip, for example, that's, you know, anyone has the opportunity to do that. They might not necessarily be able to lead the trip, but if they want to have a trip, then that's always put out to the committee at the start of the year when we're putting the calendar together. And if you fancy paddling somewhere, then put that up as a trip, find yourself a leader, and that becomes something else on the club calendar. And that enables everyone to be able to offer something that they want out of the club.
How would you describe the culture and the vibe that, you know, how's it sort of connected with you? You've obviously kept going back.
I think, again, to reiterate Karen and Ruud, the culture is down to the people. I guess that's obvious, but the people are friendly, welcoming, and I think supportive. I think the support enables people to come in, to feel secure, like Ruud said, to go out there and maybe be doing something that, I'm not sure about this, but, you know, you've got people there who are looking out for you and, you know, giving you a bit of encouragement and enabling you to push your limits. And that's certainly something I need. Improving my paddling, which is something that I want to do all the time, that's been a great opportunity.
That's brilliant. We've also got Jim and Donald, and Donald's founding member with the club. I think started back in 2002. Donald's a very experienced advanced sea kayak coach, qualified back in, I'll leave that one to you, Donald.
When was it? 1980s? Early 1980s.
That sounds good. He's an active provider of sea kayak leader qualifications. And then Jim started sea kayaking through the club back in 2004, is now qualified and leading for the club and on the committee as equipment officer. Perhaps you could describe, Donald, the club culture from your point of view and maybe how this has developed since you were one of the ones that actually set the club up.
Yeah, I was having a think about this and I found it quite difficult to answer, but I think certainly contributes a fair bit to the culture as we'd like to think that we're inclusive. And I guess that's been reinforced by the previous folk that have been speaking, welcoming. And I think also focus. So we're a sea kayak club. We focus on sea kayaking and we try and do that well. We've developed organically over the years. But having said that, we've also got quite a good formula, I guess I'd call it, for the basics as to what we want in our summer program, what sort of things we want in our winter program, but also ensuring, you know, there's variety from year to year. So that there are certain things that are always there that people expect to see, and then we fill in the gap. Expeditioning is a big part of the club, and you know, when you go expeditioning, there's inevitably a social element too, because you're sitting around the campfire for an evening or whatever. And I think because you get that from the expeditioning, it has developed to be part of the other activities we do. You know, Karen and Ruud mentioned, you know, we have a start of the season bar meal after the first night, end of the season bar meal. Our winter meetings, we're very lucky to have access to a meeting room at the Red Garth Pub in Old Meldrum. And that just, as a venue, just helps create a social element. So people come for a bar meal beforehand, they'll have a beer, they'll hang around after the meeting. It does create, I guess, more of a sort of family feeling for things. And I think when I was thinking through things, you know, that is an important part of the club. Again, it's been mentioned that, you know, we provide opportunities, you know, for members to develop, whether that's personal paddling, you know, working towards leadership awards, working towards coaching awards. So that, and there's always, so obviously, if it's an award, then it needs to be a, you know, slightly more formal training course of some sort. But we always chuck in skill sessions, rescue sessions, scenario sessions, because I think one of the big things in the club is that, you know, we want to obviously create, you know, safe paddlers, but we want them to be conscientious group paddlers, because that just makes everybody's life easier, you know, whether it's leaders or coaches or whatever. Make sure people have the confidence that they can be a competent group member. So you don't have that many accidental capsizes, sea paddling. You know, if there is one in a club activity, then it's the closest person's rescue, unless they say to the leader that, you know, they don't feel up to doing that rescue. So I guess creating that interdependence between people, which also, you know, part of it comes from the social element, part of it comes from us as a club trying to make sure that everybody who comes out with us is a competent club partner at whatever level they happen to be at. And as Jill mentioned, you know, we've got a lot of trips. I was just having a look while the others were talking. This summer's program with 14 weekend trips on weekend or longer, all graded using what many years ago when I was on the SCA Touring Committee, you know, the Touring Committee guidelines for grade ABC trips. So we have a variety of trip. And I think it's also important, this element that, again, as Jill mentioned, anyone can organise something for Nesky. And if it's a trip, you know, then the club will, you know, help them to find a leader who's appropriate for the level of that trip. And I think as far as running the club's concerned, we've never been particularly prescriptive about the committee. So if someone's interested in being the committee, come and join us. So we've got 14 people in the committee just now. Probably we'll get 10 from each meeting. That's fine. But it does mean that the work gets divvied out. So it's not particularly onerous being on the committee. And that helps, you know, to get people in the committee as well. So it sort of works both ways. And also, we, more than half the committee are not coaches or leaders, you know, so they're club members. So the committee is representing the membership, not just the people who are driving the paddling side of things, if that's the right way of putting it.
I bet there'll be lots of people listening who sit on other club committees who are quite envious when you say it's not that onerous and we share the workload between us. But I guess it's a bit chicken and egg, isn't it? You know, you have a good culture and you have a good vibe that spreads through the club, and that's clearly going to be there in the committee as well. Then it's a space people want to be in and want to help and want to volunteer and want to get involved.
I mean, I think, you know, if I was sort of, you know, thinking, well, you know, if other clubs are sort of listening to this saying, how do I do that? I think one of the big things would be, you know, make sure you've got a good number of your club members who are not coaches or leaders, you know, on the committee, because I think then the committee represents the club membership. And I guess just to add one other thing, which I'm sure Jim will talk a wee bit about, is, you know, we're trying to develop your leaders and coaches, and again, the more we have there, you know, the easier everybody's life is. So again, I don't want to brag. I think we've got 5 advanced leaders, 12 leaders, and 7 coaches. Now, wow. Some of these are people who've got more than one hat on. But my aim is to make sure there's enough qualified people in the club to look after me when I'm getting older.
Nice.
You're going to have to be a bit selfish on that one if you want to be. How about you, Jim? What, you're a longer-term member than some this evening, but you joined us as just an ordinary member, didn't you, at the start?
Well, I'd never really done any sea kayaking until perhaps the weekend before I joined Nesky. It was a neighbour who got me interested in... I was a river paddler before that, but the idea of sea kayaking had never really occurred to me. And from afar, it seems quite a banal activity, just sitting on still water and moving endlessly in one direction, which is very different from river paddling, of course. But no, all it took was one day on the sea and I realised, hang on, I'm hooked already. But yeah, that was kind of 19 years ago, and I don't know where the time's gone, to be honest. Having said that, Yes, there's been a huge progression, I suppose, in my experience of sea kayaking, thanks to Nesky, really.
You've gone on that journey from a beginner through to advanced leader now, aren't you?
Yeah. It's all happened very gradually. In fact, my assessor for the advanced qualification said, "Why did you leave it so late?" Which was, I didn't quite know how to take that. But I'm there now anyway, and enjoying it like I never thought I would, to be honest. I'm not really someone who would have gravitated towards being a leader in that sense of the term. I've always kind of pursued sports for the love of them rather than, I suppose quite selfishly, rather than thinking what I could contribute for others. I suppose maybe it's as I get older, I can see, you know, that side of things much more.
It's interesting. The giving and volunteering is one of the key strands of the NHS's Five Steps to Wellbeing, in that it is that the act of supporting others and helping others is good for us. It's good for the soul. It makes us feel good too. So.
Yes, I think surprisingly, when you do it, I would say, yeah, my experience of the transition from just being a paddler, say in a group, to leading that group was quite difficult to begin with, you know, because you are suddenly loaded with an awful lot of responsibility and you don't really have enough experience or knowledge to deal with it. It's all coming at you, but gradually that beds in and you can begin to see that it brings a whole new dimension into your experience of paddling. Certainly being responsible for others is, yeah, it's quite a tall order, but as you get better at it, it becomes more enjoyable. And then when you get the satisfaction of seeing other people develop and enjoy the plans that you've brought to fruition. You know, it's not always plan A that comes to fruition. But it's very seldom that you don't really get a good experience out of a trip that you've led. So it's really thanks to Donald, I think. One committee meeting, we were sitting there and he suddenly realised that all the leaders were about to leave, or sadly some had passed away, and it was basically him. And he said that, well, really, we should be looking to replace the lost leadership. So that was the call that went out. And I think at least four of us responded and were trained up within the year, I reckon, to sea kayak leader level. And then obviously I enjoyed it so much that I carried on.
And that's a big journey to go from, you know, being struggling for coaches and leaders to having a big, what we'd call a big team now. And I can really see how you're developing paddlers to become independent, to be good group members. There's a natural progression, isn't there, as you get more skilled, that if you wanted to go down the leadership role, you're well on the way to that journey. And I think, Jill, your aspirations for you to go in that direction?
Well, Donald's got aspirations. my aspirations are to keep learning. That's something I enjoy. And I very much want to be a better paddler. And I think to get there on the journey, then I think doing my assessments and maybe moving on to leadership, maybe that's part of it. And just Jim and I have talked about this and he has explained to me, just as he said just now, that, you know, to start with, he wasn't comfortable with taking that responsibility. So that's really, you know, I look at Jim and I think, oh, wow, one day I could be like Jim.
But
to hear that he felt the way that I'm feeling at the moment, so that's quite comforting. And I do want to improve and move on, and I think eventually the leadership will be part of that journey.
Nice.
Are you feeling the real support from a club that to help you on that journey?
Oh, more than support. Yeah, I'm feeling a big push, but in a very nice way. I'm feeling a supported push. You know, people are telling me that I should go for it, I can do it, and that's very encouraging to have that. It's not a bad push at all. And I do appreciate being pushed sometimes. And that's a very welcome thing from my paddling chums in the club.
I mean, I think you have to look at sea kayaking as a particular case where leadership and development is kind of a necessary part of paddle sports. I could imagine that there are other, you know, disciplines where it isn't quite so, doesn't need to be quite so structured. I think with sea kayaking, if you're going to do it, you know, with multi-paddler trips, so you're paddling as a group, you cannot really do that without having an established chain of command, really. I mean, that sounds a bit heavy-handed because I think leadership is many things on many different levels, and different people will lead differently. I think actually I learned a lot watching Donald, because when you go on these training sessions for being a leader, you find yourself shouting commands just about every fourth stroke, and so is everyone else. But actually, if you watch Donald, he almost says nothing. Perhaps at the beginning he'll give a wee chat, but you always know that he's in control. And I think that's where I probably aim to be as well. It makes for a better paddling experience for everyone, I think. But there are other people who will do it differently and probably equally successfully. I wouldn't want to say there's only one format.
I think definitely there's space there for individuals, but and individual styles for sure. And different people will enjoy paddling with different people. And that's that's one of the joys of paddling. But I'm guessing that we need that within the committee or the organisation, you'll be wanting to carry on that vibe that's so important to the club and to the club members. How does that happen within the club and the different leaders coming through the process?
How does the vibe happen?
Yeah, how does that tone?
I think we cannot overlook the coincidence that we have the committee volunteer of the year as well in Donald. I wouldn't say by any stretch it's all down to Donald, but it is a lot down to Donald. I don't think anyone spends as much time as Donald does attending to the organisational side. It's no accident that no one ever wants to take his place, just because you know just what amount of work he puts in. So I think that we've got a momentum, and It's not only down to Donald, but it is largely down to Donald that every year he will get the next season's calendar out. That's done through the committee, but it gets brought up regularly. We do it well in advance. It's published. It's debated. People can add to it. So it is this momentum, I think, that we've got that just seems to perpetuate.
I think just to follow on from what you're saying there, Jim, is that Donald is very much the drive within the club, supported by the committee and the rest of the committee members and the coaches and the leaders. But I think the success of the club is due to not only Donald's drive, but the culture of bringing people on, bringing people up. And by having all these leaders and coaches that we've got within the club, that in its own right enables us to have such a huge, busy calendar because we've got enough resources without leaning on any one person.
There's also a lot of enthusiasm from club members. You know, when you're chatting on the water, people love getting out and doing the trips that they do. And that inspires and motivates myself, certainly, you know, hearing the enthusiasm for what they've been doing. And I don't think there's an us and them of the committee and members. I couldn't even tell you off the top of my head, you know, who the committee members are, but it's just everybody is equally enthusiastic about the outings and the trips and being on the water. Everyone's enthusiasm, it raises a bar with others as well.
And there's an art to, that group space in terms of allowing that enthusiasm to people to thrive and to be inspired and to be energetic and to be enthusiastic, isn't there? Because it can easily get squashed if you're not listened to or your ideas aren't taken forward or you know, you're sidelined or whatever. So there is a big skill in that, allowing everybody to feel like that.
It's quite something as a mere member and a new person in the group, paddling with people that you know are at the top of their game, who have paddled all these islands, all these places, circumnavigated and so on, and you're part of the group that they're in. That really does lift everybody, I think, to know that you're surrounded by some really, really experienced paddlers. It's great.
Yeah, and always willing to share their experience and their tips as well, from what are all the little tricks in doing or not doing the different things. And what I find as well, it's maybe like repeating myself what I said before, but it doesn't matter if you do it wrong. There's no pressure. You can do things wrong as many times as you want, right? And the coach will never go like, "What are you doing now?" Right? There's always a smiley face. To me, that gives you the freedom to test yourself, go ahead, do it again and again.
We've been talking about, it all sounds rosy. I'm sure there have been challenges within the club, difficult situations. How have you guys navigated through some of those?
I'll maybe start on that one. Jim touched on the fact that we had a period when, for various reasons, people moving away or whatever, that coaches and leaders in the club was going down. We need to be proactive in addressing that, just to get the balance back so that we could spread the load and it wasn't falling onto a small number of shoulders. I'm pleased that we've resolved that and we're in a good position just now, but it doesn't mean that we can't keep going and encouraging people to go down the leadership coaching route and in supporting them financially. So we have a policy contributing 50% to training and assessment costs or leadership and coaching awards on the basis that person will then put back into the club. And that's worked sort of fairly well, or say very well. I think also we're very clear, if there's a leader or a coach for a particular session, that the committee has confidence in that person and has given that person the authority, the committee's authority to manage that particular activity. We don't really have too many, sort of issues with poor behaviour or whatever, but if coach leader makes a decision, then, the committee will support them in that. And I think that's quite important. I think moving forward, we're beginning to become a victim of our own success. So we sat at, high 50s, low 60s membership for goodness knows how many years. We're up into the 90s now, which is fine. Quite a lot of these members are not local. Don't know whether word's got out as to what we're doing and other people want to come and join us, which is fine. But it does mean, that we're having to be a wee bit more formal than we have been in the past, as far as vetting people to come on particular trips. And we're just in the process of putting out guidelines to the club as to what people need to be able to do to go on a grade A trip, a grade B trip, grade C trip, etc. Just because we're now not in the position where the coaches or leaders have seen, can guarantee to have seen somebody on the water before they sign up for a trip. And that is necessary. It sits a wee bit uneasily with me because I don't want to overburden things with procedures and things. But, if it needs to be done for the safety of the activities, then it's a necessary evil. To me, that's probably one of the, the big things that's exercising us and that we're having to address at the moment. I'm sure others might come up with other things.
That's really interesting, Donald, because I can totally see that a close-knit group of people who are local, who know each other, you've got that whole friendly, welcoming chat at the pub, relaxed people, you relax in each other's company. It's leaders and coaches know the level of participants. So, it makes that people are on the right level trip for them. They're not being pushed too hard or bored because it's too easy. And then as the club's going to grow, you start to lose some of that, what sounds like a very family feel, and that we're going to have to think about working to make how you maintain that and how you keep, like you say, keep people safe at the bottom line.
Yeah, I think once people are you know, taking part in club activities, you know, like to think that, that they will be part of that family. It's just particularly when we've got new members are not coming out on a Tuesday night or whatever, you know, we just need to be conscious of the safety element of things for trips.
What we'd really like is, what would you advise other clubs, you know, how they might develop a more positive culture, you know, that both attracts and retain members? Because clearly you guys are getting it right. Membership's increasing and maintaining, you know, maintaining members. What would you suggest, any of you, if you would like to chip in?
When somebody says something, don't make it all me.
I think our leadership structure has got something to do with it. It's something positive. It's certainly not something that ever gets in the way of the general enjoyment of the sport. You know, it's certainly in the background, but I think that's perhaps the place it should be. You know, it is the leader's responsibility to have done all the planning. But equally, I think that, as Donald said before, everyone does assume a responsibility to some extent being within the group. And that it does have quite an inclusive side to it. I think it is perhaps just that it doesn't seem to attract egos, where there doesn't seem to be a lot of ego clashing going on, when you might think that in a sport that where you do have this kind of requirement for leadership, it would occur.
We certainly hear of it occurring within the sport. So yeah, again, it's out there. It's nice to hear that, really nice to hear that it doesn't feel like that within Nesky.
Yeah. How about you, Karen Rood? Where do you know, you're the newer members. You discussed culture quite a lot at the start. What advice would you give to other clubs?
Well, I wouldn't dare advise other clubs, but I certainly see what works with Nesky. And I agree there is a distinct lack of egos, and that makes a huge difference, because, you know, everyone is just in it for the sole purpose of the sport and caring about the people around about. You know, I've said that before. I think it's a real interesting one, having dipped into other clubs over the years and quite recently, where there's huge memberships. And this feeling in Nesky that is very much, and I know I'm really new to it, but it is like a lovely sort of family feel. I think that would be really difficult to hold on to. And if that is what gives the club its great culture and vibe, then do decisions need to be made about how you retain that and don't let it become a big club with several hundred members, because that quite possibly would change the dynamics of the feel of the club. You know, do you put a physical geographical range on, you know, where memberships can come from? That sounds terrible, but you know, if not, do you end up in 2 years' time with 200 members and not knowing who people are? Or do we through the SCA look at really rolling out more of sort of proficiency awards and training, so that you know if somebody's got certain tickets that they have been through a process of coaching, that they have a certain ability and therefore they are competent to be on the water in certain conditions, whether it's with one club or another club, or a WhatsApp group or a peer group, which seems to be the way things are going. So I think there's lots of kind of newish things out there that will probably come to the fore over the coming years, and they might prove to be challenging for clubs, but, you know, they need to all be looked at. And yeah, I think it's just always worth remembering what it is that makes Nesky feel as comfortable and pleasant and great for the members as it currently does.
We'll have to come back in 5 years' time, the team of us, and chat again and see what Nesky's up to and where everybody is and what they're all doing.
I have no experience with other kayaking clubs, so I can't really say what they are or are not doing. What I do have experience with is with scuba diving clubs, and it's a complete different sport. It's very much more focused on the individual. What I do like with Nesky, and don't know if other clubs that are doing or not, but I think the activities we do out of the water are an important part. All the things we do outside the sea, outside the day trips, the weekend trips, the week trips, the things we do like in the Red Guard, building your own Greenland paddle, the VHF course, the first aid course, all that stuff is really important to me. And what Jim said in the presentation that was done last year, and Karen just said it as well, it is like you feel like having an instant second family. And again, I don't know how that works with any of the other clubs, but if you create that atmosphere, I think that's a real good starting point with having success.
I was just going to say, I have been member of other clubs, and also having spoken to members of other clubs, what I see that appears to be the problem there is that lack of support with leaders and coaches. And it's interesting to hear from Donald that back in the day, Nesky also had that problem, but resolved it. And I think, as I said earlier, having the huge range of activities that the Nesky has available, that's the thing brings in members. That's the thing that creates that family bond, because there are a lot of activities of all different types to suit all different needs. And we've got quite an active membership. And I think the active membership comes from having the different activities, which comes from having the people to support the activities.
Being relatively new to the whole thing, it's early days to say, but I feel that I could see myself growing through the club with others at the same sort of level that I'm at just now, and us having little sort of peer groups within that maybe do some training together, some personal development together, maybe some other courses and so on. And that feels nice. That's long term. That's something I look forward to.
Part of our role within the SCA is to support clubs and their committees. If we were to ask what more we could do to support you, what might be on your wish list?
Some of the questions that get debated in committee meetings about our kind of bureaucratic load. We, for instance, have an ongoing debate about the possibility of peer paddling, which is kind of going in the face of everything we've talked about leadership. It's where all the paddlers take responsibility for themselves, and there is no recognised leader. And to what extent Nesky can get involved with doing that. We've had quite a bit of difficulty even looking at the blurb on the SCA website, trying to make head and tail of it. So I think having a bit more to and fro on difficult issues like that might help. What do you think, Donald?
Yeah, no, that's certainly one that, as Jim says, has been exercising us. And it really comes down to, if something appears to be attached to a club, then it's effectively covered by the SCA insurance, and therefore the committee have a responsibility to be across it to make sure it happens safely. And that doesn't sit easily with the concept of peer paddling. We're in this sort of betwixt and between on that particular subject. And there isn't a resolution that I can see at the moment. But I think things like that, and Karen touched on, the effect of better communications, different ways of doing things. Despite what everyone said, we're a relatively traditional club in the way we go about things. I don't see that as being a bad thing, but there will be pressures on that as time goes on. And I don't think we'd be the only club who would feel these pressures. So that is, as Jim says, probably something that the SCA could help clubs to navigate through or provide guidance on as these different things start coming up in the future.
Great. Yeah, no, that's really good to hear. And I mean, that you raise the issue of peer paddling. It's something that's it's kind of really bubbled to the surface in the last few years. And as Karen, you alluded to, there's more and more of it happening outside of clubs, wee little mini clubs setting up on sort of Facebook clubs almost. So it's an emerging thing, and I can't give you a bullet answer, but we'd certainly be, it's really good to know what these issues are within the clubs, that we can work hard ourselves to better support the clubs in those spaces.
Just like to say thank you to all of you for giving us your time this evening. That's been a fascinating insight into Nesky, from setting up to supporting coaches to the culture to new members to those who've been at different longevity within the club. It's been a really fascinating listen. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy that.
Yeah, I echo that. Thank you, everybody. It has been a real pleasure talking to everyone this evening and for sharing your insights and your passion for the club and all the good work that you guys have been doing and the fun you're having on the water too. Thank you to everyone at home for listening. In this People of Paddle Sport podcast series, we share stories from a diverse paddle sport community. If you'd like to share your story or know someone else who might, we'd love to hear from you. Just email Roger or I at hello@canoescotland.org. Be sure to like and subscribe to us whenever you listen to your podcasts. You can find us on Podbeam, Spotify, and Apple. We hope you enjoyed listening today and that you're enjoying being active on the water.